This is Jade Robran.
25 minutes to 2 o'clock. I hope you're enjoying your Monday afternoon. Thank you very much for joining the program. In 1914, polar explorer Sir Ernest Shackleton led the Imperial Trans-Antarctic Expedition. Fast forward 100 years, and you can now follow in the same footsteps of Shackleton. To explain this, we're joined by Justine Van Morick, head of public engagement at the South Australian Museum, and also James Calvert, who is a senior lecturer at Torrens University, and he's also the director of Thin Ice VR. Guys, thank you very much for joining the program.
Thanks, Jade.
Thank you for having us.
I would love to start with, I guess, the story of Sir Ernest Shackleton.
Right, yes. It's a pretty incredible story for those who don't know. I mean, we kind of refer to it as the greatest story of leadership and survival, you know, ever told, where Shackleton set out to trek across Antarctica, but of course his ship, the Endurance, never made it there. And so began a two-year ordeal to reach safety, you know, for Shackleton and for the 27 crew that he had with him. It includes some incredible feats of sailing across the Southern Ocean and also some mountaineering on South Georgia Island. So that's, I can't really do his story justice in a couple of minutes, but that's kind of it in a nutshell.
And I guess some near-death experiences along the way.
Oh, so many, so many. If you read his accounts and the accounts of the crew, your jaw hits the floor. The amount of times that life should have been lost, but it just wasn't. You know, from the ice opening up underneath them and nearly swallowing them, they're sliding down mountains, slipping, falling, starvation. You name it, that everything was thrown at them. But no, they survived.
And how long did their journey take?
It was almost 2 years, 1914 to 1916. Yeah, almost, including almost a year just floating across the ice, you know, on these big chunks of pack ice after their ship sank before they reached some dry land. It was quite an ordeal.
And in those days, you can't just call for help, so there was nothing but survival.
That's right. Yeah, when you're faced with no other option, you know, when no one's coming to get you, because everyone thinks that you're on your following your original plan, and these treks took years anyway. So you're kind of left to your own devices.
Can you explain the kind of conditions they were in?
This is deep within the subantarctic region was where they started at South Georgia Island, and then heading into to Antarctica, and they planned on being there for over a year. So that's going through the summer seasons when the conditions are a little bit better, but then having to hunker down during an Antarctic winter with little to no sunlight, absolutely freezing conditions, some of the strongest winds on the planet, freezing waters. So, yeah, if that gives you some idea.
And we've been talking about, like, survival, but, I mean, just the basics, food, where did that come from?
So they had some food supplies with them, and they had this this concoction called hoosh, I think. So that's a mixture of dried meats and fats and sugars and salts. And they ate that because of the high calorie content. But then they would supplement that with seals, essentially, hunting and killing seals and having to eat seal meat and the seal blubber as well to survive. It was a pretty limited diet, that's for sure.
Just incredible story of survival, but also leadership. Can you tell us a bit about who the bloke was and what are the stories? What's the legacy he's left behind?
He has left a rich legacy. And a lot of what I'll say now, I picked up from reading Shackleton's own words and accounts, but also from spending a lot of time with Tim Jarvis, the polar explorer, polar explorer, who retraced Shackleton's steps. But he was an incredible leader. I mean, he put together this expedition, which is no small feat in the first place, to take his crew of 27 to the Antarctic and then trek across it, keeping everyone kind of unified, not only on the ship, but keeping everyone back at home, all the investors and stakeholders happy.
Yeah.
Then, of course, when the ship sank, you know, he had to sort of completely reassess his goals, which was one thing. But then the new goal became, well, I'm responsible for these men, and I've got to get them all to safety. And so not only is it leadership in terms of making the decisions that lead to the best outcome and you know, relying on his knowledge of the Antarctic and polar exploration to get out of there, but just how to keep a group of 27 men sane over 2 years, how to keep them all busy, how to put them to work, how to keep them unified as a group and all working towards the same goal. And so Shackleton, you know, a few of his sort of approaches were to do things like lead from the front, you know, like quite often he would knuckle down and do the things that needed doing. He would put himself in danger, you know, not asking others to do what he wasn't willing to do himself. He also showed quite a lot of empathy for them as well. And there were stories of, you know, when they'd go out and on a bit of a, you know, take the dogs and they would sled out to try and find food or to survey the area. And if they were gone for quite a long time, Shackleton would, when they were coming back, he would head out and bring them cups of hot milk and welcome them back in, you know, acknowledging the efforts that they've put in. So, yeah, it's an incredible story of leadership, definitely.
So this is in 1914. We're talking about polar explorer Sir Ernest Shackleton, who led the Imperial Trans-Antarctic Expedition. Now we fast forward 100 years later and you can now follow in his footsteps. And James, you are also the director of a production called Thin Ice, as well as being a senior lecturer at Torrens University. Your other cap is, like I said, the director of Thin Ice VR. Can you tell us, what is Thin Ice?
It's a virtual reality experience. And really, it lets you walk in Shackleton's footsteps. We sent the crew down to the Antarctic and went to the exact locations Shackleton's epic takes place in, led by Tim Jarvis, the polar explorer, the man who has retraced Shackleton's journey and knows firsthand what it was like. And we tell that story, you know, from 100 years ago, by letting you, the audience, put on this virtual reality headset and no longer be here and now, but be there 100 years ago, seeing what they saw, like seeing Shackleton do what he did, being there, seeing the ice as it was. It's an authentic experience, so everything that's in there, the locations, they're all the real locations. All the equipment that you see in Thin Ice VR is the actual equipment they used, which we scanned from artifacts from places like the South Australian Museum. And you get to sort of learn about his story by essentially being in his story. And we link that story of leadership and survival, the Shackleton story, with one of the environment, with what's happening down in the Antarctic as we speak. The place doesn't look the same now as it did 100 years ago. We have these records of glaciers and the ice from Shackleton and his men, but when you go there now, it's not the same. Those glaciers have changed. And so Thin Ice is not only a story of this incredible story of leadership and survival, but it's also one of impacts of climate change on the region.
Which is very impactful, because I don't think we fully understand just what has happened to the planet, you know, because we've only seen, I guess, you know, movies and docos in recent times. But you go back 100 years, there would be a significant before and after, I'm guessing.
That's right. Yeah, and it is significant. So Tim Jarvis, when he was recreating Shackleton's epic, was trekking across South Georgia Island, and, you know, he reached a particular glacier, and for Shackleton it was quite the obstacle, full of crevasse and lots of danger, you know, 50 to 100 metres thick this ice was. But for Tim, it was just a stroll through ankle-deep meltwater coming off the glacier, which had retreated far back inland. And I think the thing that we all humans struggle with is this comprehension of scale. When you look at a two-dimensional image, one that you see in a photograph or in a video, in a documentary, and there are some wonderful documentaries about this, but it's hard to really get a gauge of just how big this place is, just how much change has occurred. And that's where virtual reality really shines. You know, because you put this headset on and you have stereoscopic vision like we do with our two eyes. You have 360 degrees around you like we do in reality. And suddenly you can see, oh, right, that's how far the ice has retreated back. That's how thick that glacier was. That's the sheer volume of ice we're talking about. And for us in Thin Ice VR, it's just one small example. I mean, it's not even covering the full range of what's happening in the Antarctic or, you know, in Greenland or in the North Pole.
So when you say virtual reality, you're in a room or in a cinema, and earlier we spoke about, you know, the ice cracking underneath his feet and, you know, and snow falls. Do you honestly feel like you're there?
Yeah, you do. So once you put this the virtual reality headset on, I mean, the real world disappears, and all that you see around you is this virtual world that we've created. And it does. It leads to this this thing we call presence. I'll try not to get too researchy, but presence essentially means that you feel present in that virtual space. I mean, if you stop and think, you will acknowledge, okay, yes, I'm still in Adelaide, South Australia. I'm sitting in a comfortable chair in the South Australian Museum. But you kind of suspend that disbelief, and your brain starts reacting as if it's real. And it's not in a scary thrill ride kind of way, but in a, wow, okay, I'm actually getting to get that experience of what it's like to stand on the Antarctic ice. Now, you know, obviously the best thing is to actually go there, but that's, you know, a very expensive and tricky thing that 99.9% of us can't do. So with things like virtual reality, we have the ability to kind of get that next best thing.
I guess this just would have been a huge hoot for Tim Jarvis to be able to just walk in the same footsteps. What did he take away? What did he tell you about the journey?
Yeah, look, I mean, that it's a challenging one.
Yeah.
The key
you and I aren't signing up for it. We'll leave it to the experts.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, my specialty is directing, you know, putting film and virtual reality projects together. But for people like Tim, you know, he learns by immersing himself in this, by doing it. And I think it's such a trial of endurance. You know, the lifeboat that they took from Elephant Island, which is a tiny little island off the coast of Antarctica, all the way across the roughest ocean in the world, the Southern Ocean, to South Georgia Island. I mean, it's a 10 to 14 day journey in a lifeboat that's the size of a queen bed. And there were six men in there, cramped below deck, trying to get some rest in between shifts at the helm or on deck, clearing away the ice. And so what I gathered from Tim was just that the sheer endurance you need, and not just that, but you're doing it as a team. So you have each person in that team goes through their own ups and downs and contributes what they can.
Yeah, not everyone's having a good day.
No, they're not. That's right. And it affects everyone differently. I mean, it's one thing for us to sort of sit back and go, oh, geez, I wonder how I would be in that situation. But, you know, when you speak to someone like Tim, you can hear it firsthand exactly what it is like to be in that situation. And it's just, I mean, I've worked with him closely on this project for the last 3 years, and it never ceases to amaze me, the stories that he tells about it.
It's just remarkable. How on earth did you come up with this concept?
Yeah, so it was Tim's idea originally to want to tell this Shackleton story in new ways and to link it with that century of change that's occurred in the Antarctic, the ice loss that's happening down there.
Mm.
And so he knew a company called Monkey Stack. They're an Adelaide-based virtual reality sort of production company, amongst many other things, games and film. And he was talking to them about it, and I also know these people at Monkey Stack, and we've been talking about doing a project similar to this as well, and it kind of pieced together like that, where the three of us got into a room, the producer at Monkey Stack, Justin White, Tim Jarvis and myself, and went, okay, I think, you know, we can use virtual reality to essentially, like I said before, let people walk in Shackleton's footsteps and get this new view of climate change. this new perspective.
So when you send Tim over there, right, is he decked out in this U-Butte suit that's got, you know, the sensors and cameras all over it? How did it actually happen?
Yeah, so he kind of leads the expedition. We actually, he was, we used like dedicated videographers and photographers. The person who captured our material works quite a lot with sort of Australian Geographic and National Geographic. And we use 360-degree cameras and other capture techniques. Tim's role in this is that sort of content expert where he kind of leads the crew on the same route that Shackleton took, and we kind of pick out the story sort of spots from there and capture them ready for virtual reality.
We're going to take a very short break. We are talking to James Calvert and also Justine Van Morick from the museum, which we'll touch on in a moment because there's a different side to this story as well at the museum, and we'll talk about how you guys can get involved. You're listening to 5AA.
This year's 5AA Radiothon proudly raised much-needed funds for Variety, the children's charity. We wish to thank each and every person who donated to Radiothon. It's through your kind donations that we were able to assist in creating a special Christmas for all kids, regardless of their challenges. If you wish to continue to support the great work of Variety, please visit varietysa.org.au. Thank you for your support of this year's 5AA Radiothon.
Across SA, there's bound to be an independent RAA-approved repairer close by. There's over 450. They're ready to assist with servicing, mechanical problems, crash repairs, and specialty jobs. They're audited to RAA's high standards, giving you peace of mind that your car's in good hands. So, before you head out on your next road trip to do the fun stuff, let RAA take care of the car stuff. Search RAA Motor for more.
Keep on moving on.
RAA approved repairers are independent service providers, not agents of RAA. Terms and conditions apply. Available from RAA.
It's your last chance to win a Riverside Fairmont holiday home in the St John Lottery $700,000 weekly prize draw. Get tickets before midnight Sunday for your chance to win one of two stunning Fairmont homes in Manham and Hindmarsh Island, plus a boat and $25,000 cash. Imagine spending weekends relaxing by the river in your very own holiday home. Don't miss out. Get tickets at stjohnlottery.com.au before midnight Sunday for the weekly draw. Licence number M14082.
Did you know shingles is caused by the reactivation of the chickenpox virus? Up to 1 in 3 people risk developing shingles in their lifetime. So if you're 50 or over, talk to your doctor. Individual symptoms may vary. Sponsored by GlaxoSmithKline Australia Melbourne.
An important message from Australian Motors Group. It's time to get going, Australia. We're keen to keep our economy moving forward. Whether you're a small or large business, we make it easy for you to order a huge range of vehicles, including Mazda, Suzuki, Isuzu Ute and Mitsubishi. From 1 to 500 fleet vehicles, Australian Motors is geared to make it happen. Act now. Order your fleet vehicles for end of financial year 2022. Get in touch with Matthew or Jody today. AustralianMotors.com.au.
Start building now, and you could be living the life many envy at the 19th. Choose your architecturally designed 2, 3, or 4 bedroom luxury home package now from just $730,000. The 19th at West offers an incredible lifestyle. Explore West's green pathways by foot or bike, sail or paddle on the iconic lake, swim at Grange Beach, or play around at the Grange Golf Club. It's all yours from just $730,000. But you'd better be quick. Visit the 19thwest.com.au today.
If you have been approved a home care package through My Aged Care or NDIS, then listen to Julia.
Mum used her care package funding and purchased a care alert to protect her while alone at home. If Mum fell or had a sudden illness, the care alert would come to her rescue so quickly. The best device she's ever owned, and it didn't cost her a cent. The team at Care Alert made it all so easy.
Use your funding wisely and give yourself real peace of mind. Visit carealert.com.au or call 1300 75 85 95.
Too many Australian families face the effects of poverty every day. But imagine being in primary school. Is it okay for poverty to hold a child back from learning? To be so young and feel your dreams are already out of reach? Did you know 1 in 6 Australian children are living in poverty? But you can help. With extra learning support, a child can break the cycle of poverty. Donate today. Search the Smith family.
Need it fixed? Fitted? Need it flushed? Replaced? Built? Tiled? Cleaned?
Give Ken a call. Ken Hall Plumbers, your local plumber since 1983. For plumbing, gas fitting, roofing and hot water. Give Ken a call. 8364 5855.
Macular degeneration is Australia's leading cause of blindness. If you're over 50, have an eye test and macular check. Early detection is vital. You can have the very early signs without even knowing. Information, guidance and support is only a phone call away. Call the Macular Disease Foundation on 1-800-111-709 for a free macular degeneration information kit.
Scraped your caravan? Walker Crash Repairs, an RAA-approved caravan crash repairer. This is Jade Robran.
We're talking about polar explorer Sir Ernest Shackleton. In 1941, he led the Imperial Transit Antarctic Expedition, and 100 years later, you can now follow in the same footsteps as him. We were just discussing, I guess it's a movie type thing, and into, you know, a virtual reality type situation where you can literally walk his footsteps, but you can also be engaged at the South Australian Museum. Let's talk to Head of Public Engagement, Justine Van Morick, who joins us, as well as James Calvert, who is the director of this film. Justine, so talk to me about how the South Australian Museum is involved.
So, Jade, we were really fortunate to talk to James and to Monkey Stack about their aspirations for Thin Ice VR. It was originally supposed to have its world premiere at Illuminate, which was in July of this year, but as you know, we got shut down due to COVID. Mm. And so we sort of stepped in and said, look, we'd love to host it at the museum. We have 90,000 objects in our polar collection, including obviously Shackleton material. And so we kind of stepped in and said, hey, can we be the venue for people to experience Thin Ice VR?
And people will get to actually see objects that we're seeing in thin ice, won't they?
They do. And that's one of the beauties about kind of partnering with James and Monkey Stack on Thin Ice, is that we actually can add authentic collection material to the experience. So you're seeing, newspaper cuttings of the earliest 20th century, the gear that they would have used. You know, you're seeing the actual kind of instruments and materials that they would have gone down to Antarctica with. And in fact, I think James alluded to it earlier, but most of the costumes and the equipment and the boats and things are actually modelled on, many of them are modelled on our collection, including the Mawson Balaclava, which is one of our most famous objects.
It's amazing. How on earth have you been able to track these objects that are, you know, 100 years old?
It's quite amazing. In fact, when we were installing the Thin Ice VR experience, in fact, our head of polar collections just walked in and handed me something and went, here, and it was actually a crampon or the thing that fits on your shoe so you can grip the ice.
Yeah.
And he just sort of put it in my hand, and I said, well, where did this come from? And he said, oh, you know, every time Mawson went to the South Pole, he would pick up stuff that other explorers left behind. So he would do a litter parade and he would pick up anything that anyone else had left behind, and he of course would come back, and you know, Mawson was quite heavily involved in South Australian Museum for many years. Yeah. He would deposit it here. So we have this kind of rich repository of Antarctic material.
How incredible. I want to ask you, is that thing heavy?
You know, it is for something that goes on the bottom of your foot, but more than that, it's got spikes hanging out of it. So, you know, in terms of putting it in someone's hand, one has to be very careful, you know, how you hold it and how you hand it to someone else.
Yeah. You don't just come along and go, oh, by the way, this is what I found.
Yeah.
Point.
Can you hold this?
There's an echidna. Yeah. Spike.
Yeah.
So, how much are tickets and what are the session times, and is it around for the school holidays? How can people be involved and see this experience?
So we opened, and we are the world premiere season. So this is the first time it's been seen anywhere in the world, which I think is really exciting. Mm. The South Australian production at the South Australian Museum, and South Australians get to see it first. So we open to the public on the 20th of November. We run right through to the 6th of February. We've got a few school sessions in the morning for the next few weeks while school's still in term. But other than that, the public sessions are 1 to 5 every day and 10 to 5 on the weekends. And then hopefully we'll get some great weather in January. We'll be able to do some late night Fridays as well. And tickets are available via either thinicevr.com or our website, the museum website.
And James, I want to ask you, how would you describe the experience to people who are, you know, thinking about it? They've listened to your story and think, wow, this sounds pretty incredible. What is the experience that they will have?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. So the good thing about it being at the museum is that you kind of walk in and you kind of going, you're getting more and more immersed the further in you go. So you walk into the room and you can see these artifacts, these images, and be introduced to this world. And then when you sit down and put the headset on, and for just over 20 minutes, get that an even deeper level of immersion. And I won't give anything away, but even during the experience itself, you kind of are going levels deeper and until you find yourself, you know, in standing next to Shackleton on the ice. And it's, I like to sort of refer to the experience as one where you kind of, you get to see it with your own eyes. And if you haven't used virtual reality before, it's a really good experience. It was designed for a very broad audience. You know, it's not a scary one or anything like that. It's designed
just a gentle introduction.
It is. And look, it's a pretty extreme journey. So there are moments where you get to see just how extreme it is, but it certainly was designed to be one for everyone. And that it would engage and inform and entertain everyone. So, yeah, I'd say, look, it could, whether that's for kids, or the whole family or anyone, but it's certainly, yeah, I like to say that see it with your own eyes kind of thing.
It sounds excellent. James and Justine, thank you very much. Dr. Derek is up next, so if you've got any pet questions, now's the time to call 822 300 000.